Hey, it's Keith Malley. How you doing over there? You know what? That's your business. What am I doing? I hope you're having a good day, and the rest is none of my concern. It's day four, reading The Great American Novel. This is chapter five, Welcome to the Jungle, and chapter six, The Holy Bible, part two. I put The Great American Novel out in 2010, first book I ever wrote. And I want you to have it so much that you can get it now for $5.99 from Amazon. Go to keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. You'll see this book, The Great American Novel, and my brand new one, The Dad Emails. You know, the year-long saga where I catfish my dad. I pretend I'm my ex-wife. He hits on me. We end up making love in a hotel room. Anyways, both books are there. The Dad Emails. And the one we're going through right now, The Great American Novel, and I'd love for you to have them. Here's some reviews, if I may. God bless Keith Malley's inner child. This is about the Dad Emails book. Wow, just wow. I'm an avid listener of the podcast Keith and the Girl, so I was along for the adventure as it unfolded, but I'm so glad I read this book too. What a wildly hilarious treat. Along with the hilarity, there are bits that made me sad too. I'm so glad the Malley kids made it out alive, and Keith got to share his story with us. I'm sure it was very cathartic for him. God damn it was. God damn it was. That's the truth. Rob, 5 stars. Keith is a genius. Only the comedic genius of Keith Malley would think to do this. Funny start to finish, and to know his dad honestly believes this never happened makes it 10 times more funny. There you have it. Well, he knows. He's in denial. He's in denial. How are you going to look at your son after all that goofiness? All right. Anyway, let's go back and see where it all began, the relationship with my dad, me coming to New York City, thoughts on religion, knowing my dad was a Catholic priest. It's in these chapters right here. Enjoy.
Chapter 5. Welcome to the Jungle. I left Mark's house again because of the psychos and Mark's unending problems with his soon-to-be ex-wife. I guess me sleeping with the ex-wife didn't help the tension. Anyway, I moved into a $100 a month room. This bar needed to also open a hotel with it in order to get its liquor license, so on the side of the bike shop they owned right next door, they turned unused space into a 10-room loophole. Small, single rooms, only a few even had a bathroom with a shower. These were obviously never intended to be inhabited by human beings. They were for kids who had troubles with their parents or for someone who had to move immediately from wherever with no money. So that's what I did. And that's when I decided to start saving money, sell all the fingerhut merchandise Beth Bally received, and finally get the hell out of Dodge. It's so easy to go where you want to in life once you get past the bullshit excuses. It's a cliche, I know, but you have to just do it. Think about your dream and then think about what you're giving up. Which one's better? In Apollo 13, Tom Hanks' wife mentions what a miracle it is going to the moon. And Tom Hanks replies, "It's not a miracle. We just decided to go." I decided to get away from my neighbors, a small group of deadheads, and finally head on out. Sure, I'll miss all the Amish in Somerset, and maybe when Somerset gets electricity, I'll stop in to visit. But like a switch, my mind was made up. I was on a high for my first real book, the one I'm reading now, but with 100 more pages because I thought every thought was a paragraph, and I was rolling with it. I was taking a Greyhound limousine to Grand Central NYC. It's ass, gas, or grass, baby, living fast. Nobody rides for free. When my dad found out, he immediately had another midlife crisis, and he came to my apartment and gave me 2 books on how to get a story published. These were the 2 dumbest books I have ever read, but I was still choked up. He went out of his way to bring these to me, and an apology. "Son, I would like to apologize for any way I treated you in the past." I was speechless. This was incredible. As he left, all I could say was, "Thank you, take care." Just like that, it was all water under the bridge. Right before I left for the city, I visited the family one last time. Later on that day, I was downstairs hearing Ken talk about Dad not letting him be an altar boy at church as punishment for doing something wrong. That's when my other brother Mark came downstairs and said Dad yelled at him because I didn't apologize for the way I treated Dad when I was a kid. After talking to Mom, I realized Dad only apologized to me so that he could hear me apologize to him. But Mom asked me if I'd apologize. For her, I said I might. We'll see what happens. The next time I see Dad that day, he starts up, "Son, I believe you have something you wish to say to me." And in my mocking voice, "An apology?" And he was shocked that I had to ask. "Most certainly. But I could do this for my mom." "All right. Sorry." "For specifically, what are you apologizing for?" Now, it's not like I'm the only kid he's having trouble with. We all feel the same. Any sibling of mine can tell the same story. I was just the first to write it down on paper and try to make $1 million off it. "Look, Dad, I gotta go. I didn't think you were expecting an apology." "Is it the drugs, son? Is it because your mother is working? All right, see ya." "Son, don't you remember me saying you may not enter this house until I receive a full, heartfelt, sincere apology? Do you remember that fateful day? Do you remember that glorious day?" "You said this when I last saw you? I don't think you said that at all." "No, I mean when you left this house for your own apartment gallivanting. I told you, wait, you're talking about years ago when I still lived there?" "Most certainly. Oh, I'm finally getting through to the boy." "I understand kissing your ass was necessary if I wanted to live here again. I didn't understand I couldn't visit my family. I misunderstood." "Well, I am most certain I know you're right," I interrupt. "I misunderstood. I'm wrong. Sorry." He replies with this, swear to God, word for word. "It would be nice if you were sorry for what you are to be sorry for." With that blessing, I went back to my apartment, sold my broken computer and camcorder for more than they were worth, even if I would have paid for them, ran to the bank as soon as a check for $2,900 was in my hand, and I went to the bus station. I knew this was for real as soon as I put my 2 weeks' notice in at my last waiter job. I was leaving on a whim. I went without a job ready. I went without a permanent place to stay. And yes, I was a little scared and a lot excited. I arrived in New York the night of August 30th, 1996. I get into Manhattan. I stay at a room this hostel had waiting for me. Hostels are inexpensive hotels around the country that encourage young people to see the world. I was using it until I found an apartment. While my world-traveling roommates, there's 8 or 10 people per room, are debating if their next stop will be Cairo, France, or Paraguay, I'm nervously looking through newspapers for my first New York apartment. While I was there looking at apartment notices on bulletin boards, I came across this place that offered free housing in exchange for working in an at-home, your home, daycare. I met this lady at her house, the house I'd be sharing, and bullshitted my way through the interview just to get an apartment. I told her how competent I was and how well I worked with children. You kidding me? I love kids. In fact, I want to someday see a city that has a professional football team made up of just my kids. The cheerleaders will be my daughters. First question, how do you wipe a baby girl's rear end? Front to back or back to front? Now, I thought about how I wipe myself. Front to back, no exceptions. For some reason, this answer, you know, had to be the opposite. Back to front, I answer with confidence. No, front to back, always. You need to make sure no feces gets inside the vagina. And I just wanted to go, oh my God, you're disgusting. And I wanted to walk out, but I really needed a place to stay. Yeah, right, front to back, of course. What'd I say? Did I say back to front? No, no, front to back, always. Isn't it obvious, you know, feces? You know how later you always think of something you should have said instead of what you did? I think a better cover-up would have been, well, I'd wipe back to front. Of course, I'm very careful. Needless to say, I didn't get the job, which is probably best. I fucking hate kids. I'm told I can stay longer than the usual limit of 1 week at the hostel. All I have to do is pay for the next week that morning. When the next week comes, I go to do it, and I'm told that I was informed wrong. A week's stay is the limit. No exceptions. I was officially homeless. I found a way to sneak into the hostel to escape the sewer heat. I found a route to take that circumvents the men guarding the doors, and I'd sleep on a patio lawn chair or downstairs in the TV room. While I was doing this, I went to an acting audition one day, and after letting the 3 or 4 guys next to me know I was looking for a place, this elderly gentleman told me about his son's apartment and how there's a pretty high turnover rate when it came to roommates. Obviously desperate, I checked it out. Scott, the man's son, and I hit it off right away. I hadn't met Alex, the dad's son, or Suzanne, the other roommate yet, but I'm told Suzanne had told Scott she had another place ready to move into at a moment's notice. Taking a chance, Scott was cool enough to let me in. I stayed there for 2 nights, and then Suzanne found out her place wouldn't be ready until the 1st of October, 3 weeks away. That's when I was busted at the hostel. I spent way too much enjoying the huge culture shock that was New York City, and by already paying about $1,000 for my new place with a security deposit, first and last month's rent, and everything else that a new place entailed, I was almost flat broke. I was extremely lucky to find the $315 a month apartment in Brooklyn at the last minute, even if it was in an all-crack neighborhood, but I was running on empty. I took the Staten Island Ferry one night at about 3 in the morning to think, see Manhattan lit up, and mostly get a chance to sleep on the long ferry benches. I got back around 6 a.m. that morning and headed downstairs to get my bag I carried with me. Scott had my only other bag of possessions at the apartment. I knew my bag was safe at the hostel. Hostels are the safest place in the world. Upon entering the hostel, this big black man follows me downstairs. He was obviously a hostel employee. And big and black.
Is that your bag?
Yeah. Why'd you leave it here all night? I left it for a few hours. I knew it was safe. As though the room I should have had was less safe than the TV room. Let me see your receipt. It's not with me. What room are you in? Without missing a beat. 418. Let's go up there. He waits for me to get my bag and we start upstairs. 418, he continues. Which bed? Oh, tonight? Oh, no, I'm not staying here tonight. You're not staying here tonight. Oh, no. I go on as if I'm saying, of course not. Oh, I see. So you think you can just stay here for free? Well, I didn't want to, but my apartment's not ready. I'm homeless. Sorry. And I'm getting ready to leave. Hold on. I'm calling the cops. Yeah, okay. I'll be right there. And then I left. The next night, I found a $40 night roach motel, which became the first time I slept in a bed in the last 4 days. It wasn't until the next day I realized it was a brothel. That night, I made plans to go back to Pennsylvania. I was going to stay with a good friend at a fraternity at Penn State until October. It wasn't my hometown, so I could convince myself I didn't already fail. Never smart enough for college, it was fun to get a chance to experience the class, wonder, and the incredible splendor that is fraternity life. That's when I invented my theory on why frat house hazing, between carrying grapes from one end of the room to another with your asshole and drinking the spit out of a glass that the upperclassmen put in, seems so unbelievably gay. I think it's because college kids think that this is how true friendships are formed. To be completely honest, I think it makes sense. How do you know Billy can keep a secret? Because he was the last one to come on a cookie that you got to watch him eat. Trust me, Billy can keep a secret. Brothers to the end with that homo. I get back to New York ready to become a big city citizen on October 1st, 1996. Now all I needed was work. I'm not proud to say it, but I was one of those idiots that bought Don LaPree's Making Money packet. I was up late, I was vulnerable, and I was hurting inside as a human being. Buying and selling, cashing in on our throwaway society. The chapter told 5 ways for you to make money if you're broke and can't afford the auctions Don relentlessly talks about. Buy things at auction and sell them for more. And if you can't afford the cheap in the sentence, buy cheap, sell high. After you hear his advice, which by the way was filled with endless spelling mistakes, you'll agree with me when I say I shouldn't have paid $60 for his booklets. I should have paid $6,000. Number one, have a yard sale. Number two, find a partner. Number three, dip into your savings. Number four, get a job. Number five, start a cleaning service. Thanks, Don. I should have called Tony Robbins instead. That's when I tried my hand at sperm donating. Pun absolutely intended. The pun was based on the fact that you use your hand to donate. Probably one of my better ones. I read about a place in the Empire State Building that paid $50 per donation, and I figured that would be my new way to make a living. The following is the very first joke I ever told as a stand-up comedian. You get paid to have an orgasm. What kind of labor is that? It's like a marijuana research ad I read. Research volunteers earn $1,000 to $1,300. Healthy male and female marijuana smokers aged 21 to 45 needed to evaluate the effects of marijuana on mood and performance. Live on a research unit at NYS Psychiatric Institute to 14 to 21 days. 212 blah, blah, blah for info. I blah, blah, blah because the number's no longer good. Sorry. And I admit it, I called it. It was always busy. What kind of people go to that? You have to have so much pot in your system when you're done, you'll never pass a drug test again. And I'm picturing this guy walking into the clinic. Yeah, I'm here for them marijuana studies. I want studies. Yeah, sir, you're just here for the cocaine studies. Yeah, but thems are over. I want the marijuana studies and the money. I want the money. And what kind of facts do they discover after they shell out at least a grand for each person? What did you find out today, Billy? What were your test subjects like? Well, Steve, I found my people to be either very happy or very paranoid by the time they finished smoking the whole bag. And you? Yep, same thing here. Jason? Yeah, same thing with me too. Interesting. They're jotting down things in their daily logs. Do we have enough money for the new group tomorrow? Yep, answers Steve. I expect to learn a lot tomorrow also. All five people, by the way, in the club that 3 a.m. morning were howling at that stuff, and I knew I had the gift. Anyway, back to the ever-pleasant topic of sperm. When I told my old army buddy Brian about my ingenious idea, he compared it to getting paid for eating. His only concern was having a million Mallies roam the earth. Think of the family reunions. And what do I put on my tax forms under employment? And are my contributions tax-free? I looked into this very briefly in California and read that some places required a high school diploma. Just to get paid as much as possible, I was going to go in with a Wall Street Journal and say that this is what I used to get off. I just hope they didn't make me use it as a test. Oh, but Texaco stocks are down today. Do you happen to have Playboy's Wet and Wild? Some lotion, maybe? Thank you, Mr. Mally, but your sperm is overqualified. Let's be honest, I'm going to have stupid sperm. They'll be in their little dish just smacking into each other. Mr. Mally, please don't be offended, but your sperm is just fucking dumb. It's okay. It's early. They're tired. They're not used to the light. They haven't eaten yet. After practicing at home like crazy, I'm ready to go in and drop off some children. I leave a sample for them to evaluate. And I think it turned out pretty good, if I do say so myself. I was to call a week later and find out if I qualified, but that was when my first real job came through. The sperm business was to be put on hold. Enter your own sperm joke here. I applied at a close Brooklyn shop that sold knickknacks, jewelry, high-priced things. It was the only store in the area that was giving full-time employment. Desperate and hungry, I took my fake resume and gave it a shot. My interview questions were simple things like where did I work last and where before that, everything that was in the paper in front of them. But I didn't even know the answers. I had to peek over to remember my own bullshit. Despite my stupidity, I was hired as a co-manager of a toy store that they had across the street. One day, while walking into the main store, not the toy store, I hear Jason and Mariah, two store workers, arguing back and forth. And there's Jason. Well, I don't want to go. I go every time. Just go. You have to. Hurry. What's going on? I had to ask. It turns out Mariah saw a black lady slip some Christmas ornament under her red sweater through the neck as she walked out. We had a shoplifter. Now, I'm no Stallone, but I'm ready for action. I'll go if Keith goes, Jason says as he goes to turn to me, but I'm already out the door. He catches up with me and points out the woman. He follows as I jog across the street behind her. What do you want to do? Jason whispers. I'm just smiling wide. I'm excited. I grab her arm and step in front of her. Excuse me, ma'am. I need to return what you took from the store. Why don't you hand it over? I'm all smug and sure of myself. She holds up the bag of items she purchased from the store. These? And I'm offended. No, ma'am. What you took and put in your sweater, you can make this easy and just hand it over. Exactly where Mariah described where the lady hid her catch is where the lady reaches. And I had her. She pulls out her pocketbook. You want my wallet? I threw my head back and sighed like my father. Jesus Christ, the boy wants my wallet. You want my wallet? No, ma'am, I don't want your wallet. They sent me after you, and I sincerely apologize for stopping you. You need my wallet? Jesus Christ, the boy needs my wallet. I don't want your wallet, ma'am. Thank you for your time. Jesus Christ! It didn't take long before I became sick of selling Tinker Toys and Duplo all day. I was sick of staring at toys our parents would never buy us, like a $35 stick and a piece of wood. That oatmeal box makes a perfectly fine drum, my mom would insist. Soon I got a job working with Rolanda, a daytime talk show. I saw a live taping and afterward I asked for work. The audience warm-upper gave me a call to hire me at $500 a week. I was going to be an audience coordinator. Knowing the new job would start at the beginning of the new year, I gave my two-week notice. It was that Christmas that I scraped what little money I had to take a bus back home and visit the family. My dad decided I didn't have to apologize for the sins of the world to visit. It was nice to visit Somerset because I wasn't able to get home for Thanksgiving, and I think that was the first year I couldn't be with my family to celebrate the beginning of the end of the Indians' land and culture. Instead, I stayed at home that night, sat in a corner, drank, and felt sorry for myself. When my army roommate Brian heard the story, he said it's okay because at least I was with the people I loved. Dad went nuts during the Christmas visit when he found out I finally learned about Hanukkah through some kid's book I read at the toy store. Catholicism is the only religion wherein you will find no holes. Compare what you're told through history to what you learn through the Bible, then compare other religions to science and history. You'll see Catholicism has the most consistencies. Go on, my son, compare. You'll see Catholicism is the Lord's way. Oh, Merry Christmas to you too, Dad. Remember when I was young and wanted to talk to a Mormon about the religion just because it was a different religion? Remember how upset you got when I went to my one landlord's church and started learning about his religion? You never let us learn about other religions. Bull crap! You kids were always free to check out other religions. All I said, and I said this to all of you kids, is if you check out another religion, feel free to live with them. In no way, shape, or form did I try to stop you from learning about another religion. Not one iota. Check out their precious religion. Just don't bother returning to this house. That was always your prerogative. You were never held here against your will. I told you since you were 3 years old, the doors all lock from the inside. I came back to New York and was told Rolanda had been canceled. I think that's what hell's like. Every so often, Satan calls a meeting. All right, I got room for one right through that exit door. Hot chicks and good food await you. Who has the ticket stub 079624? And you're delighted and you rush to the devil. I do, I have it. And he reads your ticket. I'm sorry, I meant 079625. I keep doing that, don't I? I apologize. Anyway, anyone here have that number? Nobody? Oh, well, maybe next time. Back to digging holes, everyone. As quickly as I get excited is as quickly as I get depressed. I was still happy, though, to be living in the capital of the world. If you have the time and the money, New York City is a thrilling, thrilling place. And that subway system they got, talk about intricate. You can go anywhere in New York on that thing, if they can get it to work. First, let's talk about subway clerks, these balls of energy. How tough is this job? You're in a hurry. You haven't planned ahead. You have to quickly get a token at the booth and then catch the train that's about to approach the station. Have you noticed that when you're not in a hurry, the token clerk is pretty efficient? If you're sweating and glancing over your shoulder at the incoming train, however, the clerk is slower than molasses. I'm running late for a job interview, and it's quite obvious I need to catch this particular approaching subway. I put exact change, $1.25 at the time, in the change slot. The clerk, ever so carefully, takes the dollar, irons it, and then puts it under a microscope. She then bites the $2 like she's a pirate, then she shoves the 2 coins up her ass. Please be patient, sir. I'm checking your coins for consistency. I told that last part to someone explaining my hate for subway clerks, and in all seriousness, the person goes, "Really? She did that?" And all I could say is, "How are you even alive?" We had the technology to put an electronic strip on a Metro card to use as payment for the subway. Many computers read the same strip on buses also, reading how much money is left on the card, as well as when it was last used. A wallet-sized card has replaced piles of tokens, yet we simply can't figure out how to put clear intercom speakers on subway cars.
Going into an arrow front, switching to track balloon. I repeat, going into a 10. Therefore, the new next stop is going over. Please step away from the closing doors.
Maybe it's not fucked up intercoms. Maybe the intercoms are clear. Maybe the conductors sound like this normally. As a kid, they used to work at drive-thrus. Or maybe, and this is my theory, the speakers are fine, but the conductors deliberately garble their voices because they have no clue where the fuck they're going. They don't know the next stop either. Listen closely next time. Only the words that matter are garbled. Then they wonder why New Yorkers aren't on their side when they strike. I find many faults with the subway system, but think how terrible conditions were like back in the days of the Underground Railroad when Harriet Tubman was freeing slaves under the dirt. Angry slave masters and rabid dogs are chasing her. Not only does the token clerk take her old sweet time collecting Harriet's change, now Harriet's Metro card won't work. She starts sweating profusely as she keeps sliding her card through the card reader, but to no avail. Beep! The dogs are getting closer. Beep! Buy 10 rides, get one free. Sounding like a great deal at the time. Beep! And she curses and goes to the next terminal. Beep! And fuck her if it is a rush hour. She's struggling to get on the railroad while others force themselves out the other way. The others aren't faring that much better. The lady at the token booth is taking so long to getting around to opening the large gate for the guy who decided to bring his bike. Finally, they're all part of the Underground Railroad. Then someone in charge, perhaps even Ms. Tubman herself, gets on the intercom.
Attention, slaves and friends of slaves. We will be once again switching at Kruger.
And the ex-slaves stare intently at the speakers.
I repeat, and this is important to your survival, the new next stop is Kruger at Kruger. Be sure to learn. Please step away from the closing doors. People, please, no shoving. There's a train coming directly behind this one. Everyone will get to where they need to go. Relax.
How come there aren't any cool subway announcers? I bet you subway driving is the easiest job. I doubt you have subway engineers in the break room talking about how horribly life-threatening their job is.
Almost crashed another one today, Bob. It was at the DeKalb Avenue turn. I'm not surprised. That shit'll kill you. Mary, how'd you do?
Oh, you know us woman drivers. Everyone laughs. I'm just joking. Seriously, though, I killed 3 and injured 7. Not bad. Not bad at all. Between the excruciating job of opening doors, closing doors, and reading off a paper what subway construction is being done in an inaudible voice, you're not really doing anything. So why not have some fun with your job? If I were a subway driver, I'd be greeting everyone through the loudspeakers at every stop. I'd share the morning stories with them, maybe tell a joke or two. I'd be the subway driver who always wanted to be a radio DJ.
And good morning, Delancey Street. My name's Keith, and welcome to the F train. There'll be about 3 places within the next 5 stops where the subway will be stopped, and I'll apologize by saying I'm waiting for the train ahead of us to pass. In actuality, the stop will be due to mechanical failure. I'm just kidding. Anyway, as you know, the F train is a long ride, so sit back and relax, and I'll be cranking out the tunes from here to Coney Island. We're on the tracks, busting out the tracks. Enjoy the trip. Hopefully the guy next to you doesn't have a knife or a biting problem. And as always, no singing from bums in any of the cars. I don't mind panhandling if you don't smell like sour milk, but absolutely no singing. You guys really are the worst. Seriously though, a shower wouldn't kill you, or maybe it might from the shock. Regardless, here we go.
And then I'd put on some fog hat. Just telling you what I'd play so you feel like you're really there.
Good evening, Broadway Lafayette. It's 5:30. Welcome to Rush Hour. As I tell all my stops, please, guys, no grinding up against woman's A's like you have no choice. Spread out. There's plenty of room for everyone. Have you heard the news today? It seems there's an Indiana guy who killed his 7-month-old son on Father's Day. Have you heard about this? He admitted to it, saying he did it to get back at his wife for not going to his father's funeral 3 years earlier. She wouldn't cut her vacation short to console her husband. If I were the wife, I'd act like I didn't care. It'd be funny, because he'd have to go around and keep killing people till I got upset. Yet the whole time I'd be going, whatever. Well, guys, it turns out my shift is over. You've been a wonderful group, and I'll catch you again, as always, tomorrow morning. Same train, same time. Peace.
Bing bong. Remember the first time you almost got into a fist fight on the subway? I'm on the subway, as I am most every day, and I take the inside seat of the two that are set sideways on the subway. I noticed the man on the outside didn't really move for me, but that was okay, until he started spreading his arms and legs into me like I used to do to my brothers when I was a kid in church. I go to stare at him, and he stops. Again, I say nothing. Then he does it again. I look over again, so he turns his back to me, crosses his legs, and leans back with pressure. What are you doing? No thought, just spoke. What are you doing? He returns the look, but his cowboy hat covers his eyes, which gives him some balls, and he finally talked.
I noticed how that seat doesn't give much room, which is why I'll never take it. You're quite past your partition. If you would stay on your side, I wouldn't be forced to lean on you and make you uncomfortable.
I was furious. I swore to God if he made me bring out the cutter uppers. What is wrong with you? Why don't you just lie down for Christ's sake? You're not comfortable on the subway? So sad.
Look, he tries again, you're further.
Shut up.
I go back to reading my Entertainment Weekly and the man sits up properly. There's some audible giggles. A minute passes and the man, about 35 to 40 years old, leans his back on me again. Apparently, he didn't enjoy being the F train's bitch. I turn to him, this time quieter but quite audible.
If you get off the same stop I do, I'm gonna kick your ass.
Very mature. He sat upright, then noticed he was the center of attention. A minute later, he does it all again. So again, I look over.
I'm getting off at 72nd Street. If you get off at 72nd Street, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. Do you understand me?
The subway stops, and we're a few stops before mine. The doors open, the man leaves. As soon as he left, a mother let her son sit next to me. Obviously, I wasn't wrong. The man deserved a beatdown. That's my story. What's yours?
We need to make this planet better, and I'm more than willing to do my part. If you feel you are ignorant beyond your years and you need a beatdown, give me a call. I'm the nicest of guys. You have a problem at 3 in the morning, call me up and I'll be there in a second. But by the same token, if you are in need of a beatdown, I will throw you one 2 times.
I'm not into violence, I'm almost anti-beatdown. But if you're looking for a gang beating without the follow-through, knock on my door. If you want a gang initiation without being in it for life, dial me up. I'm there for you.
Back to our story.
Soon we found out Scott, the guy who was nice enough to take me in without knowing me, hadn't been paying the rent money we've been giving him, and so we're evicted. Alex, Suzanne, and I then moved to our second apartment. She soon moved into a loft of artists, and Alex and I got on each other's nerves so much he had to leave. The lease was changed from my roommate's name to my name at the end of the lease, which gave the landlord a right to jack the rent from $855 to $1,008. Supposedly, because of my great negotiating skills, I was able to lower it to $900. Of course, that could have been his plan all along. I give you lease for $75,000 a year, but you clever man, I give lease only $900. Very suave you are, very suave. And like a fool, I'm the one laughing all the way home. I never had a lease in my name before. Back home in Pennsylvania, you trusted everyone, and there was no need for leases. In New York, where you can't trust anyone, things are different. With bad credit, no references, and Pennsylvania ID, I figured it wouldn't be easy. My credit's perfect. What's this credit report say? Oh, my dad's credit got on mine. We have the same name and apparently the same social security number and the same birthday. Oh, he fucked it up for me. That's what happened. Oh, that asshole. That asshole. When I had the apartment by myself, I thought I might get lonely if I couldn't afford to go out, but I immediately learned otherwise. There aren't many things better than living alone. Unless you're 90 years old or crippled, you know, then it's probably not really cool. I'll give you that one. I loved having my own five-room apartment. I'd walk around the apartment bare balls naked, singing at the top of my lungs as I'm swinging my dick around like it's a baseball bat, knocking lamps off tables and pictures off walls. Erect. I was definitely erect. Then it soon hit me. I can't afford $900 a month. I tried justifying paying an extra $450 per month just to have an apartment by myself. One of my greatest gifts is that I can justify anything. So first, I take $450 a month and multiply it by 12 months. That's $5,400. Is it worth $5,400 a year to have an apartment by myself? Of course not. So I divide $450 by 30 days in a month and I get $15 a day. Is it worth having your own apartment for an extra $15 a day? No, but it's much better than paying over $5,000 a year. So I divide it again. I take $15 a day and divide it by 24 hours in a day and I get 62.5 cents. Then I take 62.5 cents and I divide that by 60 minutes in an hour. I carefully reread the contract I signed. Not only must I pay an additional $50 if rent is paid after the fifth, but every time the landlord comes to your house to collect your late rent, there's an additional $100 fee. If I were the landlord, I'd be coming to your house every day. Hello? No rent yet? That's fine. I have a calculator. Have a good evening. You were just here during lunch. This isn't fair. See you in 10 minutes. I couldn't afford it, but I loved it. When I was a kid and the parent not working went out to get the mail, for a few brief seconds, we, the children of the household, were free. My dad traveled a lot selling insurance. We loved it. I'd always ask, when are you coming back? Sooner than you'd like, he'd always reply. Sometimes he tried to catch me off guard. I was quick, though. Why does it matter how long I'm gone? When someone calls for you, when should I say you'll be back? Why did I enjoy the house so much more when the parents were gone? I thought being a latchkey kid meant you had some kind of rare disease. When I found out it meant you were a kid whose parents were never around, I never felt sorry for them anymore. What I would have given to be a latchkey kid. Dad would be the first to tell you how horrible all five of us were as kids, but after seeing other kids, he'd have to be the first to admit we might not have been that bad after all. We didn't smoke crack while Dad sold whole-term policies. We didn't sneak cigarettes from the corner store. We didn't even smoke invisible cigarettes. The worst we did was watch a movie we knew we shouldn't, something with too much violence, something with too many innuendos. My dad taught me that word, innuendo. Everything was an innuendo. Nothing was different when we were alone, yet nothing was better than being alone. I couldn't afford my own furniture in this new apartment, but I had the place set up nicely. My house was made up of everyone else's garbage. If you threw a chair out last night, chances are very good it's now in my apartment. You might find your old broken TV back outside, though. I needed to get rid of it to make room for your stinky old couch. God, you had an ugly couch. I'll be honest, though. I might have your couch even if you didn't throw it out. I had a beautiful love seat and gorgeous entertainment shelves. I could understand why a love seat would be outside, and I'm sure there's a logical reason why an entertainment center is out of your house. But once you turn your back, I tell myself you were planning on putting the furniture in the garbage, but it got too heavy, so you simply set it next to your doorway. The half-filled Coke glass next to the couch must have been too heavy to take to the trash also. Sometimes I pass a barbecue party near my house and I help myself. Usually people are so confused they don't ask questions no matter how many fixings I put on my burger. Sometimes though, on rare occasions, just as I'm putting on my seventh topping, they do say something. Simply apologize. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were throwing this shit out. One thing I did have to buy on my own was a good VCR. So I went down to a PC Richard & Sons. Now, I'm not just picking on them. All the outlets are the same. At least they're better than little no-name shops you find only in big cities. VCR, one head, $2,700. I'm like, $2,700? That's insane. Ah, for you, we give $500. You save $2,200. Am I an idiot?
Wow, what a deal.
A secret. I give you $200. Look, take it down to 50 cents. I still won't buy it from you. If you can take off a few $100 on a whim, you're fucking with me. This isn't to say the people at big name stores are geniuses. The products I always look for are the best and the brightest.
Wow, this has so many cool things.
Yes, the sales help informs me. Very good choice. You'd be happy with this model. Yeah, I think, but there's things I'm not sure about. Like, what's movie return? Like right there. Just admit you have no goddamn clue about your job. Does Movie Return take the movie back to Blockbuster for you? If so, you got yourself a deal. I'm not really sure about that feature exactly. Really? Because you've been doing pretty good so far. I'm familiar with the feature, but not really. Well, at least you touched on it. Now, I see this particular model is $40 more than this one. Why is that? And I let him search, because the stereo input plugs are on the front instead of the back. I see. And that one time I plug in my cords, well, obviously, it'd be easier to plug the cords in the front of my VCR as opposed to the back. Well worth $40. And I see here it has super rewind and super fast forward. What's that exactly? Super rewind. It's worth it. Super rewind. Okay, you have regular rewind, right? Right. Okay, well, it's better. It's super? Yeah, exactly. Now, as though I haven't yet called him an ass to his face, I look him straight in the eye and I ask, is it super duper?
Yes, it comes in very handy.
And that's when I said, you know what?
What?
And I tap him on the back. You're super duper. See ya. I looked at printer scanner models at a computer store, and the genius salesman starts trying to sell me a model. Every time they start with, when you think about it, you know whatever follows is bullshit. They should just start with, I'm a complete idiot, but look at these features. There's a lot, huh? The printer scanner combinations are more expensive than I expected, and the salesman only, as usual, made things less attractive.
Well, when you think about it,
The salesman then noticed the sign on the printer that read 7-in-1. First of all, ever notice that the first couple features in the whatever in one are what you're buying and the rest are bullshit? It's a printer, a scanner, a fax, and a phone. But look, it also dials in, it dials out, there's a dialing tone when you pick up the receiver, it accepts paper. The funniest part, though, is always when the salesperson uses these in their strategy. And I try to stop them, save them from some embarrassment, but they always insist. $475? No. Not even a question, I say. Way too much. And he looks at me like I'm nuts.
Really?
Like he's going to pick up five of them himself before he finishes the shift. Now, he continues, this is what we call 7-in-1. Oh, I see. That's a term the general public is familiar with. Maybe you've heard about this product on TV, he continues. It's what we call in the business world a 7-in-1. And then he explains it to me. What that means, essentially, is there's actually seven products in, and I cut them off. One? Exactly. Are you familiar with it? I was at Radio Shack fairly recently, and I know you're thinking, how recently? This is a book, but I easily forget how bad these stories are, and I'm sure I went back recently. I asked for an attachment for an early generation iPod. By this time, you can look at pictures on your iPod. Radio Shack not only didn't know what an iPod was, they looked at me like I was the craziest person on the face of the earth. You know, the iPod, the white Apple MP3 player with the scroll wheel. You download songs on it. I don't think they make such a thing. I only have myself to blame, and I walk past them and look for a stereo cord I need in their cord section. Soon a worker comes over. Can I help you? And no, I think. I know you can't, actually. And instead I say, oh, I'm just looking for something. I'm fine, thanks.
Well, what do you need?
I'll find it. I'm fine, thanks. Well, I stalked this. I know where everything is. Tell me. And like an idiot,
I do. I need a simple audio plug, 1/4 inch to 1/8 inch. And then they just stare with you. They have no clue. Let's see. Now it's just uncomfortable. And then they turn to me. You sure they make that? I can't wait till I have money to throw around. I would have loved to give this guy a dollar bill and go, you're free to go. After buying all the house necessities, I realized that to pay rent, I would need a roommate. And despite being proud of my ability to judge people, I called my first New York City roommate pick very wrong. Gus did coke all the time. And when he did, he got in this excited, hurried state that caused him to go around the house cleaning everything. The first day he did coke in my apartment, he scrubbed down the bathroom that's been neglected for over a year. Someone asked me if I was worried about my roommate having a coke problem, and I'm thinking, where's the problem? Here's coke, a straw, and a scrub brush. Blow out your brain and get to work. The people who do drugs don't make very good spokespeople, do they? I smoked weed with this chick once who told me after we finished a blunt that it was laced with Special K, which is known in the veterinarian community by the more common name, cat tranquilizer. The next day, I'm talking to a coworker who experiments with everything, and he told me that he and his girlfriend did K once. He said the two of them went blind at some point, and his girlfriend actually could not move from her spot for a short while. They were, understandably, scared and frightened. So I assume you won't be doing that again. Well, what happens when you assume? That's right. Everybody becomes a jackass. And he replies, hell yeah, we'll do it again. Are you serious? Sure, fuck it. Recently, my friend Adam bought weed off this guy, a friend of his, and this was the conversation. Do you want the A weed? Yeah, sure, that's fine. Or the A plus weed. Oh, and I couldn't compose myself. Adam, take the A++ weed. I couldn't stop. Do you want the C- weed, which is good, or this, the A+ weed? Fucking addicts. My aforementioned roommate Gus threw up in a garbage bag, so I asked if he was okay. Sure, he responds. That's what happens when you do really good coke. He was surprised by my laughter. What? You say it so matter-of-factly. I'm having a great time. Oh, looks like I gotta throw up now. You do coke, you throw up, he says. That's why they call it blow. Well, I guess I never really thought about that. Anyway, here's end dust and some paper towels. Go clean something. He's accepting the things he cannot change, and I have a clean apartment. But it wasn't all roses. My roommate used to hear voices in his head before he moved in with me. Something he couldn't mention before I took his money, but something he had no problem blurting out on day two. He said the thousands of voices never had anything to say, they just screamed. That's when my roommate started putting big cuts in his arms and legs. As he watched the blood ooze out, the voices got quieter. First of all, how do you realize that slicing yourself up calms the voices down? How do you get to that conclusion? Wouldn't you think you'd try other things first? Like yogurt? With fruit? That strawberry banana is pretty tasty. Maybe that'll calm them down. Or try cable. Maybe some soft porn. Take the voices out to a night on the town. Maybe they're tired of being cramped up. My point is, don't go straight for the slicing. Think about your options. Maybe they just want the remote. Well, now he just contemplates it. By age 20, my roommate had seriously tried to kill himself several times. One time he took a shard of glass, stabbed it into his wrist, took it out, and went to bed in hopes of bleeding to death. Soon his mom came in, saw the blood everywhere, and yelled at him to clean himself up. To be honest, though, my mom probably would have done the same thing. Did you pay for that mattress? Did you buy that quilt? No, I think those are my sheets you're bleeding all over. You pay for the linen. You can do whatever you want with it. What in God's name is wrong with you? Clean that up. I asked him why he didn't just try again when his mother left the room. I mean, at first, your life is completely horrible. But now, not only is your life completely horrible, but you also have to clean up. I try again. My roommate was a vet assistant, so now he feels he's this great human doctor who understands completely how the body works. Once he tried to take a hunting knife and stab himself in the heart. Now, you don't know where your heart is, not exactly. Did you say the Pledge of Allegiance and then stab yourself? He said he stabbed himself in the chest, got in an inch or two, then he physically couldn't do it. He said something got in the way. What do you think that was, doctor? The rib cage? I think that's a little thing we like to call the sternum. Another suicide attempt story is the time he was at fat camp. He's no longer obese or even fat. And he tried to hang himself off an electrical pipe just below the ceiling that connected to a power outlet.
He got up on the chair, tied the rope around the pipe and his neck in proper suicide fashion, and he kicked the chair out from under him. The entire pipe structure came crashing to the ground. If that happened to me, I'd be so ashamed I'd have to kill myself. I'm so embarrassed I could just die. Gus's constant talk about killing himself got me to thinking about what I would do if I were going to kill myself. And here's what I'm thinking. Those days before you're about to kill yourself shouldn't be stressful. Those should be the most relaxing, carefree days of your life. Hold off killing yourself and do whatever the hell you want. And if things get ugly, then kill yourself. Knowing at any time you're willing to kill yourself, my friend, there is no greater feeling of freedom. Walk into Radio Shack and walk out with a new computer. Just grab a stereo system off the rack and leave. Dollars to donuts, nobody even notices. And if they do and you go to jail, kill yourself. Kick someone annoying in the crotch. If you can be billed for it, buy it. Date someone you know is wrong for you. Sign a lease in Manhattan. If you're crazy and you want to kill yourself, don't even think of it as a curse. Think of it as a blessing. You get to do things everyone else only dreams of. Bipolar schmipolar. Next time you're over at someone's house, overturn their coffee table as you give a Charlton Heston yell, "Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!" and then kill yourself. Why living with him was so horrendous? Crazy people love to tell you how crazy they used to be and what medication they're on. They love to tell you this whether you're alone, with parents visiting, at work, or on a date, and it just got insane. The point is, when checking out a prospective roommate, ask the questions we never ask. We never ask, "So will you be able to pay rent every month?" We just assume they could or they wouldn't have bothered coming in. But if we asked, maybe they'd say something like, "You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Every third month, I'm going to have a little trouble." Most importantly, don't be afraid to ask a potential roommate if they are psycho. Ask if they considered suicide within the last week. Ask if they hear voices. If they are nuts, they'll either want to get it off their chest or at the very least, they'll twitch a little. If they're not nuts, they'll simply think you were joking. The day Gus was gone was so spiritual. Gus was so creepy, I had to scrub the entire apartment down when he left. Okay, so I watched a maid clean my house, but it got scrubbed down and that's the point. It's weird getting a maid. I never had one before, but the crust on my tub alone made me pick up the phone. Some people clean a little before the maid comes over. I almost did that until I found out they charged $18 an hour with a 4-hour minimum. I then started picking up dust bunnies and hiding them throughout the house, knowing she better find them like she's part of an Easter egg hunt. When she came over, though, I couldn't watch her clean. I couldn't even be near the same room. I made up bullshit errands to leave the house, and when I was in the house, I'd go to the furthest room from where she was to talk on the phone. I'll hear her washing dishes, and I feel bad. I realize I'm paying you almost $100, but those are my dishes. How lazy am I? Are you scrubbing the stove? No, I'll get that. You relax. Would you like a beverage? Now you're on the tub? Don't worry about it. I'll get it later. I mean, if I just would have kept on top of it, it's much easier to clean when you just keep on top of it. I'm sorry my place is so dirty. There's no reason I can't fold my own damn underwear. I leave my maid to herself, and in my head, I tell myself she's just in the kitchen busy playing bridge with her friends so that I don't feel like I'm some sick slave master. Staying in the house while your maid's cleaning is like sitting in your car while a mechanic's working on it. About 6 months later, I called up the maid service again. They must have sent over some new girl because she came a little dressed up. Maybe she didn't hear the stories. I have the only house that not only justifies paying a cleaning service $18 an hour, but it makes it a steal. Chapter 6. The Holy Bible, Part 2. Oh, sorry. This is an I am between myself and my father. Son, I know that deep down you do have some serious bones in you that can give a direct, truthful answer. So, hey, let's get serious for a moment. Hey, Dad, we're not getting married anytime soon. So, are you living together as if you were married? We're living together, yes. What happened to following God's teachings? God doesn't mind people living together. As man and wife when not married, he does. Well, we're not man and wife. Then why do you live sexually as if you were? Okay, let's say I did. Then I would have sex whether we lived together or not. Why? Because it's good times. Do you think that the eternal fires of hell are going to be considered as good times also? Well, not real good times, no. Why do you think God made sex so good? As a reward for a married couple to stay together and put up with each other and the hassles of raising children. Wow, you think so? I think so. And God taught so. God taught about it'll get you over wife and kid hassles. When we are young, we think that we shall live forever, and if not forever, then at least very long, and thus we have time to change our ways at some future time. However, such is not always the case. Did the people who died in the terrorist attack think that they would stand before the judgment seat of Christ when they left for work that morning? Yes, to your question. Well, I think God meant no sex between two Catholics, and she's Jewish, so it's okay. Funny, funny. I whisper Catholic things in her ear when she's sleeping to change her. Do you realize that you have the ideal personality to be a superb priest if you ever got serious about the love God has for you? Well, I don't plan on not ever having sex. You know, that could create a problem. Being a priest doesn't sound healthy. God keeps whispering noble things in your own ear. Maybe it's time you start listening and get real. Yeah, get real indeed. Let me see if I understand you correctly. You would become a priest if you could marry? Well, probably not, but can you marry? I didn't think you were serious. But yes, there are ways of doing that. Like? Orthodox priests have valid sacraments and are permitted to marry if they marry before they are ordained by the holy priesthood. Aren't these kinds of things cheating a bit, like you're getting over? Why? Byzantine priests were permitted to marry in the United States until 1929, in Canada and Europe long after that, and the Roman rite they married until about the 1200s. So you can just switch your beliefs a little bit to get married in a religion that allows it. Do I understand that you are talking about the right and wrong of switching some beliefs? What are you now doing with your life that matches the teachings of the Catholic Church? What's that have anything to do with it? Does it make it right? No. But questioning its inappropriateness does seem a little strange coming from you. Me so evil. Have you ever heard of Saint Augustine? He got all the snakes out of Ireland. He was bad and then he went good. I never thought that you were evil, just that you did not like anyone, including God, to put limitations on your actions. Strangely enough, I think that by your own actions, you put more limitations on yourself than God ever imposed on you. Amen. Amen indeed. So how about those priest boy touchers? That's not cool. So why not come back to the full glory of the Catholic Church? Well, I don't believe in a lot of it, that's why. And no, that's not cool, but there are sinful people in every walk of life, teachers, scout leaders, ministers, rabbis, etc. Humanity suffers from its fallen nature. That is why we all so desperately need God's mercy and guidance. Like what? Like what I don't believe in? A lot of it seems ridiculous. Take sex for one. What God could think you can spend the rest of your life with one person that you never had sex with? That's ridiculous to me. And I'll go to hell for it? That's ridiculous too. How nicely we humans, from time to time, think that we have the right to tell our Creator what is right and wrong and who does He think He is anyway? To tell me what I can and cannot do and reward me or punish me if I do or do not follow His instructions that He decides is good for me. Do you think that you are the first to come up with such thoughts? Yes. I don't understand that point. I'm not the first. So what? What can I say? Other than I sincerely pray, and I do, that God in His mercy leads you to His Father's house of many mansions. You don't understand what point. Am I the first to think God's rules are silly? What's that point? Your thoughts on the matter of God's dominion over us is nothing new. Judas also had like thoughts. The point is, just because you prefer to think that way because you enjoy the temporary pleasures it currently affords you is a display of short-sightedness when we are talking about things that will affect your eternity. But if I don't believe in them, what can I do? Believe? The question is, do you not believe in them because admitting to them will force you to change your current lifestyle, or because your faith in Christ Jesus has slipped away?
Well, I don't like either of those choices.
No one does. But whether we like it or not, want to admit it to ourselves or not, we are forced to admit it to ourselves. Well, I guess I slipped away once I was old enough to think for myself. Are you saying that Catholics cannot think for themselves? Oh my goodness, no. I'm saying when I was a kid, I was told things, then I grow up and I can think about them. Well, when you grow up, maybe it was time that you did some diligent research to see if what you were told when you were young was correct or not. Have you done such diligent research? If so, how? Where? Well, I don't like the way you say so much stuff can be proven, how great it is, and then the things that can't are great because it's so wondrous. You never picked a side. You want me to pick a clear source for you to check out? Try reading the Summa Theologica, whatever he wrote, of Thomas Aquinas. I did not write it. What have I taught you that was wishy-washy? That's washy. Just things, I don't know. That's a cop-out. Whatever. Why don't you read some factual sources on God's dealings with his creation? Like, pick any book in the New Testament at random and read it with serious intent to learn. You just might pleasantly surprise yourself. I'd rather have sex. Well, I am sure you aren't having it 24 hours a day. I am. I got a good like that. I see whenever you are put in a position where you must get serious and you do not like where that serious thought is going, you choose to attempt to turn the conversation into a series of jokes. What a shame. Indeed. Someday maybe I'll grow up and learn how to deal. You are grown up. It's time you realized how much God loves you. You got it. Yes. But do you? Clever. Hey, I'm the father of Keith. Would you expect less of me? Okay, I have to go move things from outside in so they don't get wet. I'll talk to you later. I left all my cocaine outside. It looks like it'll rain. Bye. May God be with you, my son. Signed off 4:03 p.m. My biggest problem about religion is all the big things that have to be taken on faith. I'd always try to figure stuff out for myself. I believe in evolution, but I'd also find a way that Adam and Eve could fit into that. That always upset my dad. He got royally pissed when I told him I understood the big mysteries about Catholicism. One day when I was a kid, I told my father I believed I understood the mystery of the Holy Trinity. You do not understand it because it is unfathomable to understand. There are three persons in one God. They are totally one being, yet at the same time, they are totally and completely separate of each other. This we can only understand by the grace of God when we reach the glory that is the Holy Land. Okay, it's like us, Dad. There's seven persons in Mali. Every member of the immediate family is uniquely and completely separate and of themselves. Yet together, we are completely and totally Mali. I was young, but it made a lot of sense to me. Dad wouldn't even take the time to see my side. I might as well compare the Holy Trinity to Charlie's Angels. Even before I could finish, no! This is a mystery! It can never be understood as long as we are on this earth! But Dad, can you see what I'm saying? If you know, you cannot understand it, for it cannot be understood. Quit being stupid. Praise Jesus. Being a Catholic isn't tough for me because of my ingenious ability to justify anything. Things like the Trinity aren't important, like that crazy rule about premarital sex. Let's discuss. First of all, on a simple practical level, how do you know you're with your soulmate if you don't know how they react in bed? Without sex, you're really just good friends who hang out a little too much. Everything's absolutely perfect between you and your partner, sans sex, so you get married and you're about to do the deed for the first time ever. All of a sudden, 30 seconds into it, the husband starts barking like a dog as he yells, "My penis has never felt better! I love my penis! Oh yeah, baby! Kidney punch!" Now, as for that nasty religious commandment, the commandment is, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." To commit adultery, one of the two people has to be married. End of story. It's not hard being a devout Catholic, not like you'd think. I say if you follow the commandments, you're guaranteed heaven. Now, let's review, in no particular order. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. These aren't even real commandments. It's later revealed in the Bible, not many people know this, that these two were added just to round out the 10.
8 commandments sounds funny. Picture this, Moses. Behold, the 8 commandments. No, not very threatening. In fact, it's downright stupid. Let's make it 10. How about... don't covet other people's stuff. How can we stretch that into 2 commandments? Let me think. Think, Jesus, think.
How dumb are these 2 commandments? Don't covet stuff? If you want something someone else has, you've sinned. You spend a night thinking about your married neighbor and you're going to hell? Please. These commandments don't count. They're just for show. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Well, no shit. Don't be stealing stuff. Want it. Even covet after it. But in the end, get your own, you jackass. As for don't kill, how many of us does this commandment stress out? I lived the best life I could, St. Peter. That is, well, you know, that ridiculous don't kill commandment. I mean, really. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Don't have other gods before me. As for the Lord's name in vain thing, the Lord doesn't mind a good Jesus joke. Actually, he quite enjoys them. And when you smack your thumb with a hammer and shout out, Jesus Christ, God damn it, you've still done nothing wrong. This is a pretty tough one to break. To do so, you must actually denounce God and sincerely mean it. You'd have to talk about his mother or something. As for no strange gods before me, whatever. To carve your very own God and praise it, who the hell's got the time? And if you took the time to do all that, you should go to hell, even if it's just for being creepy. Another point I'd like to make is that if you do have your own God, are you really concerned about any of Jesus' commandments? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, we covered this one, no problems here. 7 down, 3 to go. But don't get too excited just yet. People think these are the easy Shemp commandments. On the contrary, these are the ones that'll kill you. This is where it could get hard being a Catholic. You have to go to church or praise God somehow. Keep holy the Sabbath day. Every Sunday or whatever day you hold dear, you have to somehow set it aside and make it special while honoring the Lord a little more than usual. However, if you can make a little extra cash on Sunday, he'll understand if you go to work. He's been poor a few times himself. This one I fail because church is so boring. I try going to church every so often, but soon it's quite obvious I'm just going through the motions. If the Lord really wanted us to go to Mass, I think he would have made it a little more fun somehow. Maybe some fireworks or something. The only thing you get is some altar boy who's half asleep ringing a bell at some point. They never know when to ring the bell. They guess. I was an altar boy. We didn't know what we were doing. We'd ring the bell long and loud to make up for the times we were busy pulling loose string off the rope that held our clothes on. You'd think the ringing of the bells would be more important. You'd think it'd somehow affect communion. Ah, shit. The Mally kid is ringing the bell. There ain't going to be no Jesus in the bread today. Sometimes I used to nudge my mom in church and whisper, "Did you see it?" She'd turn to me. "See what?" "When the bread turned into the body of Christ. I saw it." "You gotta look real close, though." I bet if you took one of those communion wafers, snuck it out of church, and had it analyzed, you'd find out it wasn't all Jesus in there. Think about it. After all this time, shouldn't we have used Jesus up? The Catholic Church will make a public announcement when they realize we're on to them. Some scientist finds out that the wafers were made up of 79% bread and only 3% Jesus. Oh, it's true. The thing is, had we continued to use 100% of the Lord in our Jesus wafers, we would run out of the Lord in September of 2083. At that time, there would simply be no more communions and therefore no more Mass. Adding filler to our Christ wafers was the only way we saw to spread out the Jesus. I can understand your shock and even anger, but deep down, you knew this would have to happen. And maybe you already knew it was happening. I mean, really, why do you think those wafers taste so good? Not only by the Son of Man, my friends. Not only by the Son of Man. Honor thy father and thy mother. This one only affects you if you're a brat or a punk kid. Otherwise, you're fine. Even as an adult, you have to lie to your parents sometimes about nothing just to keep them happy. Which brings us to the toughest commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness. God doesn't mind an out-and-out lie on a resume. He does mind that you lied about fucking 14 candy stripers when they came to your house to sell cookies. Now, you may wonder why the Lord would even care about lies when the lie doesn't hurt anyone. Thing is, you have to keep in mind that Jesus hears everything everyone is saying all the time. Although lying about the 12-foot trout you caught 2 weeks ago doesn't really harm anyone, lies like this simply get on Jesus' nerves, and he will send you to hell for it. And those are the 10. You'll hear people say how it takes so much more to get to heaven than simply saying some prayers and going to church once a week. This is exactly why I'm glad I had the chance to present this segment to you. As we've just learned, it doesn't take that much more.
But Keith, what about the seven deadly sins?
Yes, those cunning, crafty, deadly sins. Now this is where you'd think you'd run into problems. Sloth, gluttony, avarice, envy, pride, malice, lust. First of all, the malice one doesn't really surprise me. Of course, hate's gonna be a sin. Pure rage as a sin doesn't really shock me. But let's think about the other ones. How many do we commit every day? And that's when I remember that these aren't even real sins. If they were important, they would have been turned into commandments. And thank God, because with my mood swings, I break every last one by 9 a.m., and I don't even wake up till noon. So don't sweat the seven sins, except that hate one. It's not nice to hate. And though it's not a commandment, don't make peanut butter sandwiches out of Holy Communion wafers. I'm not sure why, but that just has to be wrong. Speaking of Jesus Christ, you think God the Son ever got gypped on presents during those days his birthday happens to fall on Christmas? And how do you surprise Christ with a present? Even deeper, how does one of the three members in God surprise the other?
A camcorder. Very nice, Holy Ghost. What a surprise. Thank you. I really didn't expect this. Yes, you did. You're God like me and you knew all along. You have bought it.
As for the three gods, what was all that about God the Father talking to God the Son when he was on the cross telling his boy not to crucify himself? God the Father is God. Didn't he see this coming? Until the last minute, did he just pretend nothing was going on?
What uprising?
There's so much they never mentioned in the Bible about Jesus being a kid. Like, what if Jesus was lactose intolerant? He's the creator of all things, yet he can't go out and grab some ice cream with his buddies. Wouldn't that be funny? You think when the Lord was a kid and he'd shit in his diapers, Joseph would just look at him in disgust, but mainly confusion? Not many people know that Christ was a bedwetter, even in grade school. Or Jesus gets his driver's license and wrecks the family horse and carriage, and his dad doesn't know what to do. Oh, great. This is our Savior. In New York, you have all the crazies. So every day, you have the pleasure of hearing people rant about the Lord at the top of their lungs on the streets and in the subways.
Praise the Lord! Praise Him! You will all burn in hell! You'll still be laughing at me while you're burning in hell!
They're trying to save your soul, but they're still a little happy to know you'll be in hell for all eternity. As for the demons of hell trying to corrupt the living, I'm sure that happens, but it's God's fault. If I was punished by being stuck in a pit of burning walls with no date of release ever, I'm sure I'd corrupt too. Wherever you're at, misery does love company. If there was a good behavior clause in hell, I'm sure things would be different. But if no matter what you do, you will never get out, then sure, I'd probably throw some breasts in your face to lust over too. But if Satan has as much power as we imagine he would, why doesn't he use it all the time? When I came home with the terrible report card, I'd pray my dad wouldn't beat me. The report card was terrible, and I prayed to both the Lord and Beelzebub. Whoever saves me from my father's wrath, I pledge my soul to thee. And Satan didn't help. Why? Why doesn't he grant us special powers when we ask? Chances are good we'd easily join him on the side of evil. Give me x-ray vision or free admission into strip clubs, and I'd do your bidding for all eternity. Now really, if Satan granted people incredible powers on the condition that we sometimes use them for sheer, unadulterated evil, how many of us could refuse? I'd steal the soda cans a bum spent 4 years collecting for the ability to fly. Now I'm sure there are rules between God and Lucifer as to what souls the devil can take. If you stole your dad's car and you can't sneak it back home because the engine's flooded, I'm sure Satan can't claim your eternal soul even though you clearly were not only willing but even offering, nay, begging, to give it up if only the car would run again. I think to be able to give up your soul for power, you must also be a little religious. I think some souls are worth more than others. My soul is 10 times that of a normal man. Satan may strike when you're vulnerable. There's no rule against that. But if you never believed in right and wrong in the first place, you're not much good to him. For example, when you corrupt an otherwise straight-laced friend to go out with you for a crazy night on the town where you end up breaking 5 commandments in the first half hour, the feeling is so much greater than if you set Candy the crack whore back a few rosaries, and Lucifer feels the same way. I had a great friend in high school named Marcus. He had a great friend named Sean. Sean was a Satanist. Now remember, this was back home in my small conservative town, so Sean was a Satanist all by himself. Anyway, Marcus would tell me stories about the supernatural, and when you heard these stories from your best friend, someone you trusted 100%, you believed them. One day, Sean drew a 9-foot pentagram on his bedroom floor and chatted away at some satanic spells. Then he covered the pentagram with a piece of carpeting when he went out so his parents wouldn't see it. Sean and Marcus left for the day. When they came back, they realized no one had been home since they left. Yet, when they entered Sean's room, the carpeting was hanging on a lamp, exposing the pentagram. Once, Sean and Marcus made a circle in the middle of an empty field. Sean chanted a spell. When the two entered the circle, it rained. When they left the circle, it stopped. Now, you have to give that some credibility when your best friend tells you that, but I'm definitely a doubting Thomas. Unless I actually see it, I'm not too sure. As for my dealings with the supernatural, I put my keys on the table right next to my computer mouse. I go to the bedroom, I come back, and I find my keys on top of a stereo speaker. Now, something tells me I had to be mistaken, but deep down, I know where I put my keys. One lady I knew told me she'd try a Ouija board with me, and I'm curious about it. I understand it's also a plastic game from Parker Brothers, but if so many people in the world have stories about it, there's got to be something to it. And what if it did work? I'm doing this with this woman I completely trust, and all of a sudden that thing you hold on to starts moving. I'd move the Oracle to buy, and I'd run out of the house crying like a little bitch. It may not appear manly, I may never be able to date this girl again, but when it comes to my everlasting soul, I ain't taking chances. I'd like proof of the supernatural, but I don't think I'd be able to handle it. But I think, like all of us, good things are going to happen to me. I do what's right, and I think that's more than enough. I bet when I go to heaven, there'll be an open box of pepperoni pizza and a 40-ounce bottle of beer waiting for me on some big white table. And there's God holding his arms towards the table as if to say, "This is for you." "Oh, but Lord," I'd say, "I have so many questions to ask you. I don't know where to begin." And he'd simply reply, "Eat up." Lord, as you know, it's been a crazy road I've traveled. May I just inquire about a few things?" "Hush now. You need your food." Often, especially when I'm at work, I think about many things beyond my control. I think about not only how things would have been so different had I taken different roads, but also how my parents told me I'd be different if I was born at a different time. In fact, I wouldn't even have been born at all. Someone else would be in my place. And I bet that person would have been some amazing asshole. Think about it. What if you just weren't around? How weird is that? That's why I believe in heaven and hell. There's got to be more. Not because we're not sure what this life is for, but simply because I can't imagine not being anywhere. And when you get to heaven, I'll bet you it ain't all roses. I'm sure you have problems there too, things you need to overcome once in a while. In fact, I guarantee that when you get to heaven, you'll stand in the middle of that huge white palace and think, "You know what? Keith was right. Again." I don't believe in karma, just like I don't believe in jinxes. Instead of just your aura force changing things somehow, let's say you have one person jinxing a sports game. What about all the other people unjinxing him? And if you stifle the jinxer, what about all his jinxing buddies around the world? Because I'm one of the few with all the answers, I've considered starting my own church. The only thing I do that's the same as the Catholic Church is the drinking of the wine and the passing of the money baskets. My whole church will be centered on the money baskets. "Oh, good morning, and welcome to the One Real Church of God. We are currently passing around large baskets for collection. As the baskets get passed around, I'd like to remind you that, although you already know this, helping out God is the number one way to ensure your place in heaven. Remember, the more you give, the more you get. You don't get it till you're dead, though, but that's cool. God's looking for cash money, as always, so be sure to fill those baskets up. We've put more baskets in circulation this weekend, so many baskets will keep coming to you. This is good because as the baskets make their way down the pews, we'll be telling you about some items Jesus would like, in addition to cold hard cash, that you may not be aware of. Some of the things Jesus Christ of Nazareth is looking for today includes food. That's right, canned goods, a steak, a bag full of fried chicken. He don't care, he's hungry. Time is different for Jesus, of course, but he hasn't had a decent meal in 17 years. Let's all see if we can help him out. Also, Jesus can use some RAM for his new computer. Jesus is also looking for various alcohols, including the great line of Budweiser products, as well as some lesser-known sake and liquors. Jesus don't mind. Not before noon on Sundays, though, please. After that, though, be sure to drop off some booze for our Lord. If any of your kids are currently playing with those handheld computer games to occupy them during church, please put them in the baskets as well. They'll rot their brain, and Jesus is looking for them anyway. I've also just been informed by His Holiness that He is looking for the first printing of the Pokemon cards. Please be sure it includes the original Pikachu. We'll be right back. At least we're not still living in the olden days. Life in the Bible was no picnic. Everyone in the Bible lived forever. Moses was 800 years old. Abraham was 920. They mention that, then they don't say anything else about it. 800 years old? You think it'd be cool to live till you're 800 years old until you think about it. 400 wasn't middle age. 40 to 50 was still middle age. They just had 700 years extra of the old years, the shit-yourself, gumming-juiced vegetables, can't-breathe-right years. Abraham's walking along a sand dune. Somebody kill me. I'm 748 years old, for Christ's sakes. I can't die. I pray for my own death. I am doing no one any good. Why are there only two tellers at the bank when it's their busiest time? Shoot me in the head. Or what if it was proportional? Being 500 was like being 50. You're 250 years old and you're like, whoa, where did my life go? Next thing you know, you're 600. Holy shit, 600 years should have sneak up on you, don't it? I still say they were old at 80 and were just given an extra 600 years to make sure they didn't have any bad thoughts. Well, I'd let you into heaven, but at age 924, I see you coveted your neighbor's wife. I was 924. What the hell? I did one wrong thing. And besides, that's not even a real commandment. I'm sorry, I can't let you in. Heaven's a nice place, but it ain't no disco. See what I'm saying? Yeah, okay. While I'm here, though, can you at least wipe my ass? It's a good thing Jesus didn't live to be 800. He wouldn't let himself go through that kind of torture. Had he wouldn't have been regarded as being so great. Sam Kinison is great, and Andrew Dice Clay is a joke because Kinison died at his peak and Dice didn't. Same with Kurt Cobain. All the great ones die young, and that's what makes them great. Had Kurt not have died young, we all would now know that Mudhoney started the whole Seattle grunge movement. But no, that's something we will never know until we arrive in the glory that is heaven. Picture Jesus not dying young. Picture our Lord and Savior becoming an old, bitter man, simply sick of knowing everything. He's married with two kids. He's fed up at his job at the foundry. Wisdom stopped paying many years ago. And he only has 40s to get him through his day. His wife doesn't make life any easier. You gonna hang out with your friends again tonight? Well, I might go out into the village and teach some. What about me? Name one thing you've ever done for me. I saved you from original sin. Sick of hearing that song and dance, the wife sighs. Fine, but what have you done for me lately? Look, I don't think you understand all I've done for you. Oh, you saved all our souls. People begat people, and then you saved all our souls. I did save your souls. Oh, good. So then none of us are going to hell? I swear, woman, don't get cute. GeekandTheGirl.com